Hey, all right. Looks like we're live. I'm gonna refresh here, check things. We've been having some issues with broadcasting, trying to get this figured out, going over multiple channels. But let's see if we've got this going. So I'm checking YouTube. Not showing theirs, but maybe we are. Maybe we're live on Twitter. We've got some people watching, so we're definitely live somewhere. Welcome, welcome everybody. This is a special edition of Freedom Tech Weekend where we are discussing. All right, we're live on YouTube. Sweet. We're discussing. Let's see if we've got this going. America's birthday. We're discussing the sovereign individual, what it means to be free, all that kind of stuff. And I'm doing a different episode today out on the back patio. I actually wanted to be sitting down in the grass under the trees, feeling the sun, but here in Austin, Texas today, we have massive thunderstorms. So, a lot of rain. And in fact, it's kind of sad. There's like flooding going on. Some people have apparently lost their lives. So, there's tragic stuff going on out there. We are going to sit here on our back patio, thankfully safe and staying out of the bad weather. But we're going to talk about how we can keep ourselves safe from a freedom standpoint, right? That's what we do here on Freedom Tech Weekend. A lot of what we talk about every single week is how do we get out of these closed systems of technology and start to play around, tinker with, and really become comfortable with a bunch of different options that we can use to take back ownership of our own data, take back ownership of our process, our flow, all that kind of stuff. So, welcome. If this is your first time joining for Freedom Tech Weekend, you might be coming from the TFTC stream that Marty and others have been building up so well over the years. Welcome. My name is Marks. I make an app called Maple AI. It's similar to ChatGPT, but it is Freedom Tech oriented. So it's end-to-end encrypted. It's myself and my co-founder Anthony. We work on it together. But doing this show every week is something that Marty and I both felt closely aligned with his audience, which is very Freedom Tech oriented as well, because this channel is TFTC, Truth for the Commoner, and that's what we're here to do. So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. I've got chat open up in the places that I can because I'm on my laptop. Let me see. I got to go over to the Zaptot stream as well. Make sure I can see the chat. My name is not plural. My name is actually Mark, but in the startup world, my email address was taken at my first startup, so they started calling me Marks because that was my email address and then my IRC handle, and it's just kind of stuck with me. So, yep, that's what I go by. All right, I've got the Zap.stream stream open as well, so I can monitor chat there. I've got YouTube chat. I don't have the Twitter chat open. But maybe I'll be able to see what's going on, because sometimes it gets aggregated, sometimes it doesn't. But we'll find out. But welcome everybody. We've got a few people in the chat. We've got a lot of people on the stream. So let's dive right into it. It is the 4th of July in the United States, America's birthday, and we're going to talk a little bit about why, what were some of the freedoms and some of the concepts that underpinned the concept of the American Revolution. Are those concepts still alive today? And then let's talk about the sovereign individual. Let me start sharing my screen. Feel free to post questions. If you've read The Sovereign Individual, I would love to have other people kind of help with this discussion. I've read it before. Let's see here. What's going on? There we go. Whew, that's a lot of windows. I want to share this one. Okay. Sorry, some technical difficulties here. I might have to just share my whole screen, which kind of sucks, but it is what it is. Looks like we're going to do that. So let's dive into it. Share the entire screen. I did turn off notifications. All right, we're jumping over to Orion here. This is my browser that I'm using. Okay, there's my notifications on Noster. And here is, okay, so here's what I did. I wanted to talk about The Sovereign Individual. I read it many years ago. It is a thick book. It is long. It is dense. So there's a lot to remember, a lot of concepts that kind of blew my mind in some ways. Other ways, it was like, wow, that really makes sense. And then other ways, I've started to see things just kind of start to come to pass, which is pretty crazy. So if you've read it and you want to chime in, feel free to chime in and let's have this discussion together. I'm not super thrilled with how this screen sharing looks with me. Bear with me as I go back to the Restream Inception here and change this. Let me stop sharing my... that's all right. Whatever. You're all part of the game here. There we go. All right. Let's customize this. Let's make that smaller. And let's do this one. Okay. Excuse me for all that. There we go. You at least get a better view now. You see a little bit more of the screen and less of me. So let's first talk about the American Revolution and some of the concepts that underpinned it. I got this really cool message yesterday when I posted I was going to be talking about this from Trivium on Noster. And Trivium had posted this right before I mentioned I was going to be talking about this. A lot of times we talk about the American Revolution being about taxes and being about the citizens feeling like they were being oppressed by some foreign government that was now living across the ocean, didn't understand their needs, didn't understand what the life that they wanted to live. And while all of that is true, Trivium writes up here that says maybe it was more about the money. So not so much the taxes, but the money itself. So here's what they say. Taxes did not spark the American Revolution. Broken money did. And yes, Bitcoin could have fixed it. The Currency Act of 1764. The Currency Act prohibited the American colonies from issuing their own money, requiring all transactions to use gold, silver, or British currency. I'm not going to read this word for word, but what ended up happening is that there wasn't enough gold, silver, or British currency to go around in the American colonies. So they were basically told, you must use these as the currencies. You can't print your own stuff. You can't innovate and do your own thing. But then they didn't have that currency. So they were kind of forced to rely on the British colonies even more to get access to that currency. And it became just a really difficult situation for them. So Benjamin Franklin, the refusal of King George to allow the colonies to operate an honest money system, which freed the ordinary man from the clutches of the money manipulators, was probably the prime cause of the revolution. So he was living during that time. He was helping to push that revolution. So I would listen to him to say this might have been one of the main causes of it because he was right there in the thick of it. Okay. You've also probably heard of this concept of the fourth turning, right? The fourth turning is a concept, really. It's multiple turnings, right? There's this first, second, third, and fourth. And it talks about periods in human history where you have these different phases that society goes through. We as humans are all these physical, biological creatures that have existed for thousands and thousands of years. We've evolved over time, but the monkey brain inside of us and the physical conditions that we have cause there to be patterns that happen throughout time. So the technology changes, the atmosphere around us maybe changes a little bit, where we're living changes, but some of the deep-rooted instincts of humans stay the same. And that is why they say history doesn't repeat, but it often rhymes. That's because we are all still kind of the same physical individuals that we were before. So I'm going to pull up something that I put into Maple. I have a couple different Maple accounts. So I'm going to read from a different one here. I don't want to pull up on the screen because switching is just too difficult right now. But I asked it to kind of talk about like the fourth turning with regards to the American Revolution. So let's go pull that up. Because the American Revolution, some say, was actually a fourth turning in and of itself, or it might have been the first turning. But I know I have it here. Please bear with me. Great. Maybe it was actually on this one. My bad. Let's see. And my microphone. I'm all sorts of out of sort here. Okay, well, I'm just going to preface it then and paraphrase it because I can't find it now. But what it was is the fourth turning is this moment where there is people are just kind of at wit's end. Society is on the brink of crumble. There is massive division going on. Does it sound familiar to you? There, people are divided, and they might not be. They might not know why they're divided, but they are, and so they can sense that something is wrong, and there is a need for some kind of revolution. And then it is when the people revolt and rebuild society in a better form that we enter into the first turning, which is where there is this collectivism and people come together and there's patriotism, not in the sense of a specific country, but there is a sense of the group because they've worked so hard and are starting on a new foot together, right? And this describes the American Revolution, right? They were at this breaking point where there was division. I can't imagine what it was like to actually live in the 1700s in the British colonies in America. Because when I think about it, like, we love to romanticize it a bit, right? We think, oh, they were these patriots who got together and said, we don't want to live under the boot of the British government anymore. They're taxing us too much. Life is too difficult. We have all this beautiful land. Why do they not let us do our own thing? But you really think about it, and this was not the majority of the people who felt this way. It was the minority of the people, at least in the beginning, right? I don't know the actual percentages, but it wasn't like you just showed up in the American colonies and everybody was like, hey, are you ready for the freedom war that we're about to have? Like, make sure you join the stream. We're all going to be celebrating freedom here in 1776. It's going to be dope. That's not how it worked. It was family members and friends who maybe there was one person in the family that was like, hey, I kind of think this freedom thing might be the best thing for us. Whereas the other seven members in their family were like, life is decent. Why do you want to rock the boat? I know that we left oppression and sailed over here, but we're good. Like, life is fine. It's really not that bad under the British rule. Yeah, we pay some taxes. You know, these are the kinds of conversations they have. There were also people who were born in the colonies, and so they didn't experience the oppression that the religious oppression and other things that they suffered in Europe to come here. So they, I just had to think it was a very difficult time to say, I want revolution. Not to mention that there were spies all over the place. And so if you talked too openly about American Revolution, you might be disappeared. You might be, captured and tortured and other things, right? There are all sorts of stuff that could happen. Nice farm you got there. It'd be a shame if something set fire to it, like that kind of stuff. Probably was not an easy time to live. Not to mention there was like disease going around. And if you wanted to travel back to Europe to get help from the French or something, you had to make this treacherous voyage over months. And then letters took forever to get back and forth. And then when you wanted to come back, like another treacherous voyage, there was all sorts of possibilities for death, despair along the way. It wasn't an easy time to live. Okay. But the concepts that they discussed, I feel like are applicable now. So a lot of people think that we are living in the fourth turning, and that's where we usher in the sovereign individual, because this book was written in 1997, and a lot of the concepts that they discussed, we are seeing happen today. So the main concept of this book, the main thesis here, discusses how technological revolutions, particularly in communication and computation, are leading to a shift from nation-state power to individual sovereignty. So obviously the name of the book is The Sovereign Individual, but it is this concept that we have grown up living in nations, and we've grown up thinking, all right, well, these nations are going to take care of us. They're going to build the roads. They're going to have the law enforcement. They're going to have the fire department. I'm going to pay my taxes. They're going to protect me, right? And that's worked well. For a lot of people, right? There are many countries around the world where that has not worked well, where powerful governments, totalitarian governments have come in, dictators have come in, malicious dictators and have taken control and exerted their power and authority over people, over the citizens. And it has not turned out well for the ordinary person, right? For the individual. So this concept of nation states, believe it or not, is not something that has existed throughout time. If you look back at feudal Europe, for example, you had these fiefdoms and you had these lords who had their domain, but then they were always fighting with each other, and there were maybe, you know, people above them that were kind of managing multiple fiefdoms. But it wasn't this concept of I belong to this country, we're all citizens together, I'm going to salute a flag, I'm going to say a pledge of allegiance, all that stuff. That's all very modern concepts in the timeline of the history of the world. Some say that this concept of turnings, first, second, third, fourth turning, that gunpowder was one of these turnings where you saw the rise of gunpowder, you saw the rise of the printing press. Both of them are technologies that completely changed the world forever. And so these fiefdoms went away, this feudal system went away, because now individual citizens were empowered with knowledge, and they were empowered with the technology of guns, and were able to create a new system. I'm the word is escaping me, but they were able to build a new system and overthrow the system that they had been living in. And the balance of power changed forever. So Sovereign Individual talks about decline of nation states and how technology is going to allow people to live where they want to and really shop around for the jurisdiction that they want to live in. If you are living in a place that is taxing you unnecessarily in your mind, and you're not getting the value for those taxes that you feel that you should, then you can simply move. And that's a basic premise. Then the rise of the sovereign individual, empowerment through direct peer-to-peer interactions without intermediaries. Yes, that is true. So this book, again, was written in 1997, just as the internet was really starting to become a thing that mainstream users were like thinking about, right? This is before the dot-com boom era of the late 90s. This was just on the precipice of that. So if you think back to a lot of the memes we like to pass around on the internet, you have that funny video from the Today Show or Good Day America, one of these shows where they were trying to figure out what email was, right? And it's just like this totally antiquated video now where they're like, what is that symbol? You know, it's the at sign in an email address. Please explain the internet to me, right? They had no idea. This is when this book was written, right? And they were predicting that in the future, we are going to live in a time where people can access information, this new information age, where they can have access no matter where they live in the world, the body of knowledge, and then they can actually transact with each other. So they can do work for somebody else in another jurisdiction somewhere around the world and get paid for it. And that's the third major technological enabler here. There's really three: the internet, encryption, which is massive, and the digital money. So they predicted Bitcoin. They described Bitcoin, but without knowing the name and without knowing the specific implementation details. Now, you could say this is prophecy, or you could just say Satoshi and others like Adam Back, like David Chaum, like others who worked on these systems, they likely read The Sovereign Individual. They likely were having a lot of similar discussions. They probably chatted in circles with the authors. And so these concepts were being discussed among the cypherpunks. So it predicted Bitcoin, but it wasn't necessarily a prophecy. It's likely that these builders were reading these works of literature and seeing the same future and building the future that they wanted to see. And that's one of the tropes that we toss around a lot here is be the future, build the future you want to see, and be the change you want to see in the world. So how long have we been going here? I think we're already pretty far here into our stream. We're going to keep going, though. There are so many good quotes in this book. When I read the book, I actually listened to it. I want to go back and read the actual physical book now so I can highlight it more. I did not take any notes when I read it because I was listening as I drove around or did yard work, that kind of stuff. We already talked about the printing press. Let's see what other things Maple gave us here. Empowerment. Discuss how these technologies allow individuals to bypass centralized systems, fostering independence. And then the tension between freedom and control. Address how governments might respond to maintain control, leading the balance between individual liberty and oversight. Okay, let's talk about both of those. So we've been talking about technology. If you think about, I have a personal experience with this. So I live in the United States. That's no secret. I live in Austin, Texas. I've been open about that. I did not live in Austin my whole life. I used to live somewhere else. And I was working in that place. And I was working in an office where I had to go into the office every day. But then I decided, we decided that we wanted to move somewhere else. Where we were living at the time, the weather conditions and the just some of the conditions, the environmental conditions there just weren't really great for us. We didn't really enjoy it. It wasn't the friendships we had. We really loved the social circle we had, but it was really the physical aspects of living there that we didn't enjoy. And so we decided to move. And we simply just picked up. I got a job working remotely for a company, and we just picked the place we wanted to go to. And this concept was really hard for a lot of people to grasp because they would ask, why are you moving to Austin? You know, what company is taking you there? What job opportunity is there for you? And they were almost slightly insulted when we said, oh, there is no job opportunity. I'm actually working remotely for a company that's based here where we were leaving, where we were moving away from. It was simply, we just wanted a change of scenery. Some people were like, that's totally cool. And we've met a lot of people here now who did the same thing. They just moved because they wanted to. Austin has this really great social vibe to it, where a lot of people who are freedom oriented just wanted to move away from where they were. And we were not being like oppressed from a freedom standpoint where we were really, unless you want to, Mother Nature was oppressed. We found a social group here of people who made the same nomadic journey that we did, but we didn't have to, because we were in the United States, we didn't have to like file any special paperwork. We didn't have to get a special passport. We didn't have to do anything crazy. We simply just upped and moved, right? The book, The Sovereign Individual, is trying to describe that concept, but on a global level, that countries will begin to compete with each other. Individuals will be able to shop around. So countries they predicted countries will start to change their tax laws, change their citizenship laws, change their passport laws to start to encourage individuals to come domicile with them or to get multiple citizenships around the world. And this is happening today. You can go get citizenship with multiple countries if you want to. You can get residences in multiple countries, or you can just pick one. You can up and move. But there is an analogy that I heard. I watched a bunch of YouTube videos about the book just to kind of refresh my memory. And one guy used the concept of cows, where you're a cow on a farm, and the farmer is milking the cow, and eventually they're going to slaughter the cow for the beef, right? But then they said eventually those cows will grow wings and be able to fly off the farm. So they are not destined for that life of being milked and then slaughtered. And that is what this is talking about, where you have the opportunity right now to grow your own wings and to explore your options. Now, if you're living in America, maybe America is your best option and you love it. I'm not telling people to repatriate or to give up their American citizenship. That's not what this is about. But this is simply, you are being empowered through technology to where you can make money anywhere in the world. And so you can choose to live anywhere in the world. And now we are seeing this transition where governments are going to start to compete for their citizens, compete with each other. The book predicts that there's going to be a period of violence. Others think that maybe they were off on that aspect of it, that this could be a more peaceful revolution. Bitcoin is honestly a tool of that peaceful revolution. A lot of people are predicting. I personally think so. I think that you can have a peaceful revolution where you have this currency now that is the rule set is enforced by everyone in the world. So the rules really can't change. The base fundamental rules don't change. You can't have a group of 12 people at the Federal Reserve or a small handful of people that sit in some office in a White House somewhere in a country who simply decide, we want to change the regulations. We want to change the rules. We want to change what the money is. We want to make more of the money. We want to change the interest rates just because we feel like it. When you're living with Bitcoin, those rules are not up to a few people. They're up to everyone, and they're effectively cemented in stone. It's very difficult to change them. They can change over time, but it's very difficult to change them. And so when you start to live with this currency, it removes the power from governments to manipulate things for their control. And so this is where it could be a peaceful revolution. Now there is, obviously, the government has a monopoly on violence. That's what they call the police. That's what they call the military. They are legally sanctioned to carry out violence on the citizens. If my neighbor were to do me wrong, or if some stranger were to do me wrong and break the law, I am not able to go grab that person and tie them up and throw them in a cage, right? I'm not able to engage with that person violently at all. That is not my right as a citizen in the United States. The United States government, and pretty much most governments around the world, do reserve that right. And so we have outsourced that. And there are good reasons for it, right? That we outsourced it in many ways. Vigilante justice is a scary place to live. But we outsourced that violence to them. So I can call the police. I can file a report. And if everything is as I say it was, then that person that wronged me could potentially get tied up and thrown into a cage, aka a cell. Right? There's obviously a lot of process in between there, but that's what could happen. So that's the monopoly on violence that they have. People kind of push back on to use that phrase, but not. I don't think people who've read the book don't push back on it. It's more normal conversation if I were to bring that up. They're like, well, the government isn't violent, but when you really peel it back, that's their main tool for continuing to do what they do. And if you choose to stop paying your taxes, if you choose to stop obeying certain rules that you don't agree with, that violence is going to come for you. So Bitcoin and other concepts, this technological revolution that we are part of, is trying to be that peaceful revolution where you slowly remove the need for that violence, the need for that excessive force, and governments can change over time and either collapse completely, which this book predicts the collapse of the nation state, or they evolve to be something else. So if you consider within the United States the ability to simply move between states, I envision that kind of being what they're describing, where you'll be able to move around the world freely and make money from anywhere in the world. If you think about people are born where they're born, they have zero choice in it. There are many things in life that we get to choose. That is not one you got to choose. You didn't get to choose the genetics that make up your body. You didn't get to choose the country that you were born in. You didn't get to choose the family that you were born in. And a lot of people, that meant really bad luck. For a lot of people, that meant really good luck. The sovereign individual is saying that luck is now being, the importance of that luck is being diminished. The playing field is being leveled. It is going to be even, and we are going to have, for lack of a better phrase, equal opportunity out there. Not equality of outcome, but equality of opportunity. I hear fireworks going off in the background. Equality of opportunity. I've left the screen on this thing. I had some quotes that I pulled up. So you think about somebody who grew up in poverty in some other country in the world that typically has not had a lot of opportunity. Well, now they can get an internet connection pretty easily, and they can start to learn, and they can gain new skills, and they can provide those skills on the open market, get paid using something like Bitcoin, and then they can level up within their society, and they can choose to stay there in that society, or they can choose to move somewhere. But the opportunities are there for anyone. So what that means is, wherever you are, you need to make sure that you are improving your skill set and making sure that your skill set is marketable on the open market, because you now have more competition around you. You used to be able to go, they talk about how we're moving from the industrial age into the information age. That's this fourth turning that they talk about in the book. It used to be that you went and worked at a factory and that was your job. And you had job security. As long as you showed up every day and did your thing, you got paid. That was it. Then we moved into kind of like the office space. but you still had a salary. You went and showed up. You did your thing. As long as you did it well enough and didn't get fired, then you could just do it for the rest of your life if you wanted to and get paid. Well, now that we are breaking down those barriers, it becomes less about just getting that nice salary job and more about you need to be providing value in order to get value in return. And that could still look like a salary job. Those aren't going away completely. But for a lot of people, that just means doing jobs here and there for individuals and companies that need it at the time. And you piece together enough of those and you build a nice living for yourself. And then you save that those earnings in a hard currency like Bitcoin, like gold, and these other ones. And then you start to build up a future for yourself where you can be even more independent. Now, gold is difficult because if you're going to move jurisdictions, you can't take it with you. It's very difficult to move. That's why Bitcoin is amazing, because you can't just take it with you easily, and it cannot be confiscated. Let's share a few quotes that I found here. This was, we're just going to go through. We're going to rattle off rapid fire and then end the stream here. To dare a thought is to risk being wrong. Incomes will become more unequal within jurisdictions and more equal between them. That's what we just talked about. The cyber economy, rather than China, could well be the greatest economic phenomenon of the next 30 years. So remember, this was written in 1997. We are now almost 20 years after that. Or 30. 20. Oh, man. Math on air is the worst. 20 years. So we have seen the rise of China. It's become very strong as industrial power, but there are cracks. People are noticing cracks in the system, right? So really, the cyber economy is going to be global. Not a globalist society in the sense that we're going to have this one government ruling the world. I really hope we don't do that. And that's what we need to, that's what this book is trying to push against. Let's see. The idea of property emerged as an inevitable consequence of farming. Let's look at some other ones here. Governments will ultimately have little choice but to treat populations and territories they serve more like customers and less in the easy that organized criminals treat the victims of a shakedown racket. Okay, let's end on this one right here. Governments will ultimately have little choice but to treat populations and territories they serve more like customers. That's the main premise of this entire book. So I highly recommend reading The Sovereign Individual today, wherever you live. Celebrate this concept of freedom. Celebrate the concepts upon which the American Revolution were fought and won. I don't think that the country we have today in America is the same that was initially built on those principles. I think we have drifted quite a bit. If you think about building a government over two and a half centuries, you slowly create another government job, another regulation, another department, another organization. And this applies to any government in the world, but I'm living here, so I'm talking about this one. And if you try to picture it as a large building, you add one more brick and then you put some masonry on it. And then you add another brick and you slowly build up this large building over centuries. If you wanted to dismantle that building, the quickest way obviously is to destroy it. But that is the most aggressive way, right? To blow it up or something like that. And that causes a lot of pain, a lot of damage, a lot of heartache. If you wanted to do it peacefully, you would dismantle it brick by brick, right? You would first take off one tile from the roof and then another one, and you would slowly disassemble it. Takes a lot of care, a lot of thought, but it's also really difficult, right? It takes a long time. technologies like Bitcoin, technologies like the internet, technologies like encryption and cryptography are trying to dismantle the system brick by brick. And maybe we can do it peacefully. We're hoping to not do it in a way that causes it to implode and blow up and cause massive damage. So look at the world around you. I highly recommend reading this book if you haven't already, or do a refresher on it. Explore a lot of these technologies that we talk about week in and week out, because that's what we're doing here. We're trying to help you dismantle the system that, if you're living in an oppressive system, we're trying to help you break free of that. Tool by tool, piece by piece, friend by friend, family member by family member. Build up your own personal network. Build up a network of friends, a network of family members that you can depend on, because that is going to be your true sovereignty. Yes, you can be a sovereign individual, but I think that we need more than just us. We need people around us. And that is not going to be the government. The government cares about the government. The government cares about itself because it has incentives to continue to grow and to continue to get elected and continue to exert power and authority. So you can't depend on the government to do that for you. You need to depend on each other. So always be building that group around you. All right. With that, I'm going to end the stream. Thank you for joining us today for this unique Freedom Tech Weekend episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Come back every week. We do this every Friday at 15:30 UTC. Typically, we talk about a technology tool. Last week, we talked about podcasting 2.0. The week before that, we talked about Daylight Computer and how you can run it as a fully Linux device and take it with you anywhere in the world. We've talked about Maple AI as an alternative to ChatGPT and other closed AI systems. So there are many other things we've talked about. I would love to hear your suggestions. So please feel free to give me suggestions in the future of what you want to see us talk about on future episodes of Freedom Tech Weekend. We try to keep these to a half hour. We're broadcasting on TFTC. We're also broadcasting on my X channel, Marks_FTW. And then we broadcast on Zap.stream, which is a Noster streaming service. If you aren't familiar with Noster, go learn about it. That'll be a future episode that we talk about. So with that, I'm going to go enjoy time with my friends and family. On this 4th of July, I'm going to celebrate the reasons why America was founded. And let's continue to build the world that we want to see and be more individual. All right. Have a great weekend. Later.